Welcome to our sermon podcast here at City of Light Anglican Church. We are a new church in Aurora, Illinois, finding a new day in Jesus. We want to see the light of Jesus rise and shine in our hearts, in our homes, and in our neighborhoods. Thanks for joining us for today's message.
Good morning. My name is Casey, and I'm one of the leaders here at City of Light, and it is my privilege to have the opportunity to speak with you this morning and talk about the psalm that we were reading and some of the difficult aspects of it. But before I do, I just wanted to share a little detail. The other day, I was talking with a friend of mine about some classical films, and we stumbled across this discussion about the Ten Commandments. And you know, the Ten Commandments, that old Charlton Heston film, is the, adjusted for inflation, the number six highest grossing film of all time. I thought that was kind of an interesting fact. I was reading some reviews about its historical significance in the film industry, and some continue to recognize this film for managing some of what they refer to as the most spectacular special effects in film history. In fact, the one special effect that stands out is probably the most difficult special effect to manage up to that point, and actually kind of was a definitive special effect for probably the next 20 to 30 years after it, according to some film scholars, was that scene of the parting of the Red Sea. At the time, that cost $1 million and took 18 months just to craft that one scene. Just to craft that one image that gives us a picture of God showing up and saving his people in a really dramatic way. And we can look at that, we can see, you know, the Israelites, they're just about out of that body of the dry bed there. How often do we get to feel like the Israelites cheering for God's triumph on the other side of a difficulty? And how often do we feel like the Egyptians drowning in the crushing weight of overwhelming circumstances? We are in the middle of a series on God's songbook, the Psalms. This is the traditional prayer book, the songbook of God's people. The Psalms have within them, as Father Trevor helped us to see last week, the entire range of human emotion and experience. I think the subtitle of the series is hashtag all the feels, I think is the unofficial subtitle. Last week, Father Trevor shared with us some ideas from Psalm 42, a psalm that's categorized as a lament. Of the 150 psalms, nearly one-third of them, actually more than one-third of them, about 59 of the psalms are considered laments. A lament is an artistic expression and exploration of our emotional disorientation, our sadness, our distress, our feelings of spiritual or emotional or relational abandonment. It's a lament. Today, we're going to look at another kind of psalm, a psalm that's labeled as a hymn, which is a psalm of praise or thanksgiving that is intended to reorient our disordered hearts. In fact, Psalm 77 that we read a little while ago, which will be our text this morning, is considered by Bible scholars to be both a lament and a hymn. It starts off as a lament, and we read just the first half, and if you were wondering why it just felt so despondent, it was a really heavy psalm to read. That expresses that full range of the lament. And this is a dialogue between man and God, as one critic said, a howl of sorrow and also a plea. a thanksgiving and a sigh of hope and trust. This is the ideas of a Catholic historian and scholar, Thomas MacDonald, and he wrote this article called Depression and the Psalms. And a couple of the ideas that I'll share with you this morning, I pulled from this article, but I really liked what he had to say at the beginning about the way that laments work. He says that the haunting failures, doubts, anxieties, and sorrows are rarely as bad as we feel them to be. But the nature of depression is that they grow outsized and heavy. They feel like a suffocating miasma, like a crushing weight that can never lift. Almost perhaps a crushing weight like an entire ancient body of water ready to crash down on you, preventing you from escape, drowning you. Before we look at the words of our psalmist this morning, I actually asked one of our church family members, Dan, to share a little bit about his own experiences with depression. And then we're going to talk a little bit about what the psalmist has to say about that. So, thanks, Dan.
So I'm going to share a lament about my time with depression. Since then, I've started sorting through the rubble that's been in my life. I've started to find healing. I've started to see the hand of God through his body, through medication, and I found a place of healing and safety, but this is going to be a time of lament in my life that was recently. So I've battled with depression for about 8 years, and I think the most frustrating thing about depression is how disorienting it is, right? When it sits in on you, everything begins to change. Your experiences in the past, what you've known to be true, gets muddled with what you feel and what is going on internally. You know, I could cognitively process the truth and the reality of God's presence and love in my life, but even though I've believed it and I know myself to be a Christian, I couldn't sort through the confusion that would be in my heart. I would go to Christian events and look around in church events, and I would struggle to keep myself together. I would just want to weep because I would see hope in other people, and I would think about the testimonies of people before they had their conversion experience, and they'd be like, oh, I see the hope of these people, and I want it. And here I am as a Christian, and I'm saying the exact same thing. Like, I want what they have. Just like the psalmist in verse 3 of what we just read, he speaks about thinking about God and trembling, right? And being disturbed and sighing and having his soul faint. And this was my experience. I would begin to just think about God who had rescued me, who had saved me, saved my soul, but it disturbed me to think about him, because my experience didn't match up with what the truth of God was. After these events, these church events or Christian events, I'd go home and I would literally be crumbled on the floor crying out to God. I would be crying out, God, please bring salvation somehow. Please say something. Break the silence somehow. And in those moments, it would be silence. It would be more silence. And this is where that disorientation begins to set in, right? That most frustrating thing about being a Christian and having depression, because even though it was God, it was so clearly the hand of God that had saved me from my death when I was 18 and I wanted to commit suicide. He stepped in and saved me. I became repulsed by the idea of God's love. I would think about the idea of God's love, and it would feel like God's hand had turned against me and his love had become hatred. I couldn't put those things together. There was such a dissonance between those two things. I want to share with you something I wrote in my journal just a little over a year ago that kind of sums up trying to navigate through the realm of depression and the hope of God. Then there's this emotional turmoil that just typically haunts my days. I feel as if I live hour by hour fighting tooth and nail with the forces of despair and death. I am exhausted. God, help me. Please, please, if you don't intervene, my soul will be plundered. Where is my rescue? If I am a friend of God, why is darkness my only companion?
The experience that Dan just shared with you so vulnerably is tragically not a unique experience. In 2009, the World Health Organization named depression as the second most cause of disability worldwide, just after cardiovascular disease. And it's expected to become the number one cause of disability by the year 2020. In the U.S., 5 to 10% of adults currently experience the symptoms of major depression, and up to about 25% meet the diagnostic criteria sometime during their life, making it one of the most common conditions treated by primary care physicians. At any given time, around 15% of American adults are taking antidepressant medications. Severe depression is often beyond description, and when such deep and painful feelings cannot be explained, they cut to the heart of one's spiritual being. In an article in Christianity Today, the writer Dan Blazer, who found those statistics, reported that this is not just a national problem. He says that studies even of religious groups, from Orthodox Jews to evangelical Christians, reveal no evidence that the frequency of depression varies across religious groups or between those who attend religious services and those who do not. So in a typical congregation of 200 adults, 50 attendees will experience depression at some point, and at least 30 are currently taking antidepressants. So, it is likely that you or someone in your sphere is clinically depressed, or has been, or maybe is in a really dark time. And for the next few minutes, as I talk about this psalm and what it offers to those of us who are either in that dark place or walking alongside of someone who is in that dark place, I'll use this word depression, and I'm going to refer to its full range of connotations. The temporary feelings of despondence, all the way up to that seemingly interminable struggle with what we would call clinical diagnosed depression. So that I'm going to use this to talk about that full range of human emotion. And that's not to diminish the significance of what Dan was describing, a full-blown clinical depression. And that's not to equate that medical condition with the general malaise or the blues, but it's to demonstrate how thorough the sweep of God's love and care for us is when it comes to the negative states in our human experience. Because what is amazing about the Bible, and the Psalms in particular, is that we see God was aware of the reality of profound clinical-grade depression and the hopelessness that accompanies it centuries before we were. He loves us enough that he gave us words and images to describe that so that we don't feel so alone. Words that we can pray back to him as we seek his healing. So here's what I want you to know or to own when you leave our worship experience this morning. Jesus is with you in the midst of your darkest suffering. Jesus is with you in the midst of your darkest suffering. Depression, as Dan mentioned, depression can distort our thinking about ourselves, about others, and about God. And so it's essential that we receive some help to reorient our perceptions. And that help may be spiritual, relational, and or medical. Right? So depression distorts our thinking. We get help, and that help may be in the form of spiritual guidance, relationships, or medical. Let's take a look at how we see the evidence of that in this psalm. If you turn to page 745 in the Pew Bibles there, if you've got those, or if you have your own, it's Psalm 77. It's right at the bottom of page 745. We're going to go on to page 746 there as you're following along. We see a really interesting opening stanza in this psalm. Right? The stanza begins and ends in this really confusing expression. The psalmist says, I cried out for help. And then at the end of verse 2, he says, and I would not be comforted. It's kind of a bizarre reality, right? And I think it illustrates really perfectly the kinds of confusion about self and others and God that we have, right? The psalmist realizes that he needs help. He feels that need. He wants it. And yet when it begins to come up to him, he refuses it. Maybe it's because the advice, the care that was offered wasn't good. Maybe it was unwise advice. Maybe it was not true. Maybe it just wasn't godly advice. But I think it's more appropriate for us to recognize that it's really evidence here of a turmoil, of a confusion of mind and soul that demonstrates just how profound the effect of depression is on the human experience. It distorts our mood. It creates feelings of worthlessness, sleeplessness. Agitation, we can't sit still, or hyperactivity, or lethargy, we just can't get going. We see profound changes in our physical body. In fact, in that article that I referenced earlier, Dan Blazer said that deep depression is embodied emotional suffering. It's something that affects our mind and our bodies. We saw that in the verse that Dan mentioned. Verse 3, I remembered God and I groaned, I meditated and grew faint, right? Do you see the connection that the psalmist is making between a mental and spiritual state and his physical body? And there's a continual cause and effect relationship between those two things. And it's creating this confusion about God. He thinks about God, which typically would bring us peace, and it's the exact opposite. He feels tricked, he feels betrayed, he feels abandoned. He's losing sleep because of God's apparent disinterest. The psalmist here has perfectly captured a crisis of faith. As we continue, we see he looks back to his past, to the former days, the years of long ago, and he remembers the songs that he had in the night. This is interesting imagery. Once he had songs, right? I remembered my songs in the night in verse 6, but now, as we just saw in verse 3, he has only groans. Those songs have deteriorated into groans. And instead of thinking about God and having trust and faith, notice that verses 7 through 9 is this list of rhetorical questions, right? Rhetorical questions are questions that an artist will use to advance a point, right? They're not really intended to have an answer because the answer is supposedly so obvious that we don't really need to speak an answer. Will the Lord reject forever? Will he show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? We think we know the obvious answer. The answer is no, 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 no to all of those things. And yet the psalmist reveals that in his disordered thinking, he had once felt favor, but now he doesn't. He had once felt relationally connected with God, and now he feels rejected. He had once felt loved, and now he feels abandoned. He had once felt that God was merciful and compassionate, and now he feels that God is angry with him, that God must be punishing him, maybe because of his wrongdoing, maybe because of his doubt, because he can't pull himself out of his emotional tailspin. We see the psalmist struggling with these disordered thoughts. And then he reaches verse 10. And it's interesting, in verse 10, as you see in the Pew Bibles, in the NIV, the translation is, "Then I thought, to this I will appeal, the years when the Most High stretched out his right hand." And this is a nice translation of that verse. It creates a nice narrative pivot point. Here's a strategy when you're reading the Psalms. You can look for patterns, and right, one of the things that Father Trevor talked about last week is we can look for the parallelism, how the poet will say the same thing in different ways to reinforce something or to add some complexity. Another device that we can use as we're reading the Psalms, kind of following that reading schedule that we're using, reading three Psalms a day, Monday through Friday, and hopefully you're joining us in that. If you haven't joined us with that, it's not too late. You can join us in that endeavor to read through the book of Psalms in the next couple of months. Here's a strategy that you can use to add level of understanding and meaning is you can find the fulcrum. You can look for this turning point. And verse 10 here serves as that. It creates this nice narrative pivot, this cause and effect, right? The psalmist says, because I am miserable and despairing, I will do this action. Because I'm despairing, I will appeal to God's stretched out his right hand. We have an expectation of what will follow. But if you notice, that sounds different from what we read in the Book of Common Prayer version. And actually, that version is a more literal rendering of the Hebrew. And there are a number of other translators who say that verse 10 should read more like what we read earlier. My grief, or in some translations, it's my wound. My wounding is this. The right hand of God has lost its power. Depression is an enemy within us. Like Satan, it lies. It whispers things that sound like truth and try to strip us of our God-given dignity and even of our very being. It reminds me a little bit, and I'm gonna nerd out just a moment. It reminds me of the end of the film Thor. There's this moment at the end in one of the extra scenes, and some of you have seen this. If you haven't, I'm sorry, you'll miss it, but you'll get the idea. But there's this scene at the end where the villain Loki, rather invisibly and tormentingly, approaches one of the main characters, Dr. Selvig. He's a human, you know, who's friends with the great Thor. And Loki's the enemy, right? He's this, and the way that he has his strength is because he deceives. And so he's invisible, but he's whispering these ideas into the ear of Dr. Selvig, right? Those of us who have seen it, we can have this really vivid imagery. If not, you can picture that same thing. Maybe you can picture a little kid's book with the angel on one side and the devil on the other, right? These voices that whisper in our ear. The appearance is deceiving, but it feels so real. The poet here, the psalmist, expresses tremendous doubt. He feels that God's hand has abandoned him. And this is a deep wound in his intellect, his emotion, and his spirit. So what is he going to do? Well, here's where we get to move into the second half of the psalm, though. We read the first half that was really despairing. Now we get to take a look at the second half of the psalm. And what's remarkable is the psalmist is going to try it again. We see in verses 11 and 12, he says, I will remember the deeds of the Lord. I will remember your miracles. I will consider all your works and meditate on your mighty deeds. He already tried this back in verses 3 through 6, right? And he said, I'm gonna recall, I'm going to try to do this. But why does he think it's going to work this time? I think it's because, if you notice the language of these verses, he says, I'm going to remember the deeds, the miracles, the works. Instead of just meditating on the concrete, or instead of meditating on the abstract, he's going to move into meditating on the concrete. Rather than just the merely psychological, he's gonna recount the physical, the times when God actually showed up unquestioningly, incontrovertibly. God showed up. And he's going to identify these times and consider them, right? I picture a jeweler picking up a stone and examining it, scrutinizing it, looking at it. This is an active mental exercise that the psalmist is going to engage in. He's going to pick up those moments. But how do we do this when our spirit is weak and our emotions are frail and our minds are distorted? Well, one place, as the psalmist suggests, is we begin by choosing to do the hard thing. When we least feel the desire, we start to study the Word of God. In his love for us and his desire to protect you, God speaks. He gives us the words that we can pray back to him. The Psalms are a great place to start because they allow us to speak honestly with God and to let him speak to us. He gave us these words. He lets us express these despairing thoughts. But in addition to the help and healing of Holy Spirit, we may need some expert help. A counselor, a pastor, a medical practitioner who will prescribe testing and evaluation and possibly medication. Because just like with any illness, right, there are different ways to approach it. And there's no shame around getting medical help for this problem. Just like somebody who's suffering from cancer or pneumonia or a sinus infection, one way that God heals is through medication. Another way that God heals is through relationships. As we see in the next stanzas, the verses 13 through 15, the psalmist begins to recount. He asks a rhetorical question again. What God is as great as our God? And the answer is no one. And he begins to recount how God displays his power among the peoples. One way to correct our distorted view of thinking is to engage, even when we don't feel like it, particularly when we don't feel like it, to engage relationally with others. This is a call to action for those of us maybe who aren't suffering from depression or aren't in a dark time. Like, this is particularly important for those of us who are feeling strong in the Lord, that we as Christians are called to weep with those who weep, to draw alongside the afflicted. When we are suffering, we need others, particularly the church. And when we are well, we need to be the others, ever watchful of those who are suffering in our family. What triumphs of God do you need to recall in your life? Who in your life can help you to identify them? The psalm ends with a really powerful image, and this is my favorite part. The imagery in verses 16 through 18, we see all this imagery here about waters and God showing up, and it says, the waters saw you and writhed, and the depths convulsed, and the clouds poured down water, and there's arrows flashing, it's lightning, and there's thunder. This is a really interesting image. I see it as a combination of a number of different moments where water has a really significant role in God's work. It's the act of creation, an act of love, God pulling order from chaos. It's the flood. It's an act of judgment where God is destroying mankind for their rebellion and disobedience. And it's an image of the Exodus, as you saw at the beginning, that picture of God saving his people, freeing them from slavery by, as we see the psalmist mentioned in verse 19, your path led through the sea, not around it, but through it. Your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen. Even if we don't know it, even if we can't see it, we can know that God is with us incarnationally. One of the other strategies that we can use when we're looking at the Psalms is to look for where Jesus shows up in the Psalm. And what's remarkable about this is that this psalmist didn't know who Jesus was, but he knew that God had a plan to save us. And I think it's almost strange at the end, the last verse, you led your people like a flock. How did the psalmist get from all this storm imagery and the escape through the Red Sea to you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron? I don't know how the psalmist did it, but I know that God invites us this morning to see that Jesus, the great shepherd, is prefigured here. That Jesus, our great shepherd, who will lead us out of the enslavement and the bondage of darkness, shows up here in the midst of our darkest suffering. Like Moses, Jesus was a prophet. Like Aaron, Jesus was a priest. He is also the great shepherd, walking in these darkest moments with us and turning the crushing waters of destruction into the cleansing waters of baptism. Recalling to mind the fact that he died and in his resurrection offers us healing spiritually as well as physically. So as we close this morning and begin to enter into the second half of our service, I'm going to invite you to take some actions today and to begin this experience of healing and claiming for you that which was purchased by Christ, our great shepherd. You can take action and do something tangible this morning. You can actually interact with the waters of baptism during communion at the baptismal font in the back. Or come up and with one of the members of the prayer team. I'll be over there with my wife this morning. You can come and pray with us and interact with the waters of baptism. You can seek help. You can talk to one of us on the prayer team during communion. You can talk to me or Father Trevor or anyone on staff this morning if you need prayer or a recommendation for next steps. You can talk to your spouse, your small group leader, or a trusted friend. You could consult your local physician, and you can consult the great physician, Jesus, because he is already there with you in your darkness.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from City of Light Anglican Church. We'd love to hear from you. You can find us online at cityoflightanglican.org. And now, may the light of Jesus scatter the darkness from before your path.